Blog Talk Radio.
Hard hits coming up, coming at you next as we do another podcast on a very special day, actually. So it is Derek Felix with the Hard Hits Network. And in a couple of minutes, we go live and we talk about what's going on in the world of sports. So get ready. that was Disturbed, and good evening, everybody, and it is A Hard Hits Network, the podcast. I'm your host, Derek Felix. It is Derek Fox Felix here in New York City on another humid, overcast night, August 9th, 2018. Actually, it really is, it's August 10th now on the East Coast, but it still feels like an August 9th, even though it's August 10th. So, good evening to everybody. Hope everybody is doing well out there as we get ready to do another edition of the podcast. We're going to mix this a little bit of a mixed bag. So we've got some baseball. Well, not as much baseball as most days because or most nights because it was Thursday. So a little bit more abbreviated action. Yankees, they won their fourth in a row. So we're going to touch on that. And Giancarlo Stanton starting to look more like the guy that I remember from last year with the Marlins, three straight games with a home run. So he's picking it up with Aaron Judge out. And I'll tell you what, Aaron Judge's status remains very uncertain. I will say that. So who knows when you're going to see Aaron Judge again. So Yankees beating up on teams they have to beat up on right now. And they're back 30 games over 500. Also got some NFL preseason. Yes, the NFL has officially returned. The preseason phase, all right? You had your training camp, and you're still going to have training camp, and then you got preseason games and exhibition. And the most important thing, obviously, is that you want your team, you want your key players to get their reps in and stay healthy, stay on the field, and be ready for the start of the season in a month. And that's the whole thing when it comes to preseason, which is why, you know, I'm not a fan of playing four games because I know we see a lot of injuries. We see a lot of costly injuries in the preseason. That's how tough football is, especially on that gridiron. So we'll talk a little bit into just a couple of preseason games, including a grudge match between the Carolina Panthers and Bills. Well, really just two players, ex-teammates, Kelvin Benjamin, former Panther, who said some not so nice things about Cam Newton, Carolina Panthers quarterback, former league MVP. So there was that. And New York Giants, New York Football Giants, remember them? Yes, they're back. They're back. Of course, they did not win their first preseason game. They only scored 10 points. And I guess the only thing I'll say is, I watched this movie a lot, so it's kind of like Phil's Day repeating over and over again in Groundhog Day with the great, legendary Bill Murray. So that's all I have to say about that. But with a bonus, because special talent that Saquon Barkley is, so I think you should expect some really good things from Saquon. So during the year, and hopefully stays healthy, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can add to this offense and actually having a running attack along with Odell Beckham back, even though he did not play tonight. And the Giants want to, they want to be a little bit cautious there. So I'll get more into that. They lose to the Cleveland Browns 2010. And also, we're going to look back into history. Yeah, we're going to flash back to the year of 1988. As a matter of fact, August 9th, 1988, on the West Coast, where something extraordinary happened. They called it the trade of the century. I can only be talking about number 99, Wayne Gretzky, the great one, moving from the Edmonton Oilers to Hollywood and to the old forum with the Los Angeles Kings. It happened on August 9th, 1988. It's the 30-year anniversary, and they've been showing some special stuff on networks, on NHL Network, on ESPN2. At least they showed the 30 for 30. And I think that was the first one ever. And really a day that changed and altered the state of hockey, changed the National Hockey League. Probably for the better because of what happened with expansion, and you know, really opened up the game for more kids to play. It grew the game. So we're going to talk about that, and I'm going to talk about it from my personal standpoint, being what a kid that was what 11 going on 12, and still being mesmerized by it. So in that summer, that trade, and it's so well documented, but I don't think it ever gets old. It's hard to believe that it's 30 years later, but it is. And we'll get into that as well. So, all right, this is the Hard Hits Network. I am your host, Derek Felix, in Staten Island, New York City. Shaolin representative, NYC, full effect. Let's get to the first topic, obviously, the New York Yankees. They win 7-3 over the Texas Rangers, as the Texas Rangers in four-game series in the Bronx. If rain doesn't interrupt the plans on the weekend, yes, the rain is supposed to come again. There's thunderstorms in the forecast on Saturday and Sunday, both days. So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. And that's just the kind of summer it is, especially this month. It's just been hellacious. And, you know, when you have that combination of high 80s to sometimes 90 with that humidity, it just creates a lot of moisture. And so we'll see. But the Yankees did get off to the good start, you know, after they swept the miserable White Sox. We may as well change their name to the Black Sox permanently because they're just so bad. And, God, that Chris Sale deal looks worse and worse all the time. I wasn't even going to mention that, but, I mean, it just looks really miserable. That's all I'm going to say. But the Yankees now host Texas. Both teams had to wait it out a little bit before they could get in to the Bronx. But they made it, and they played, and the Yankees behind J.A. Happ was now 2-for-2. And two Yankee starts since coming over from the Blue Jays. Proves 12-6, six innings, four hits, three earned over that six innings. So quality start, one walk, nine strikeouts. Did give up a home run to Jurickson Profar, who finally looks to be fulfilling some of those lofty expectations. Texas, now that he has a spot where he can play. J.A. Happ, 2-for-2. Two wins and two starts, back from that hand-mouth and hand-foot-and-mouth disease. Oh, God. That's really crazy. You know, also touched off on Noah Syndergaard, and Syndergaard mocked it, of course, because it happened to J.A. Happ. He went on the deal, missed his start against the Red Sox, I think it was last Saturday. Yeah. The game that Chance Adams started, and pitched reasonably well in. He did get, you know, he gave up the three runs, he gave up the two-run blast, but you know what? I mean, he pitched okay. He pitched all right. He obviously got sent back to Wilkes-Barre Scranton, where he'll continue to fine-tune along with Justice Sheffield. But you know, right now the Yankees they're being carried by Giancarlo Stanton, and it's about time. Giancarlo Stanton is one of the best sluggers in the game. And when he's hot, he's one of the best players. Of course, everybody's made the comparison this year. You know, the Red Sox had to pay J.D. Martinez a lot of money. Stanton makes more. But yeah. So, it is what it is. It is what it is. So, that's all I have to really say. JD obviously has outperformed Giancarlo, but Giancarlo, when he gets hot, he can really, really carry a team. He hit one that's still traveling. It was like measured at 449. Carlo, his third straight game of home run. After hitting his first Yankee Grand Slam last night in a win, or I should say Wednesday night in that win. He had his 28th. He's up to 28 home runs now and 74 RBIs, and he's doing the job. Aaron Hicks continues to produce his 20th home run, and every home run is a new career best. And so 20 home runs for the center fielder that doesn't get a lot of respect, but plays great defense and continues to produce in the middle of the order. Neil Walker, you know, I changed my tune on him, and what does he do the next day? A 2-home-run game for Neil Walker from both sides of the plate. It's a home run from each side of the plate. The Yankees play a little home run derby. And Miguel Andujar, not to be forgotten, as he continues to strengthen his case for AL Rookie of the Year as he closes the gap on Gleyber Torres with his 16th home run and another multiple hit game for Miggy, as Gleyber actually got some rest with Neil Walker getting the start at second and hitting the 2 home runs and continuing to prove his worth now. So the Yankees had 5 home runs altogether. There were 6 home runs total. The game didn't take that long. It was only 2 hours and 31 minutes. You know, the only thing that took long was the 9th inning, where Aroldis Chapman was a little rusty, and he walked the first 2 batters. And then there was this really odd long meeting. And not a meeting of the minds, but just a long meeting where, I mean, usually you get a mound visit, you know, the umpire breaks it up, but they were out there for a long time. And it's just like, is there something wrong with Aroldis Chapman? Because this is exactly what happened to him in Boston, although he got a little squeezed by the plate umpire on that one. But he was not throwing strikes. His fastball was not hitting over the plate. He went to his slider, which seems to be his out pitch these days, and bounced back and got the next 3 outs, striking out a pair and getting the last player swinging. And the Yankees get the victory and are now 30 games over 500. They do actually gain a game on the Red Sox, although yeah, they're 8 back. They're 8 back and they're 7 on the loss column. So, but they did pick up a game on Boston. They actually lost a game. They finally lose a game. A 6-game win streak is no more as they lose to the awful Toronto Blue Jays. The Blue Jays knocking around Rick Porcello. The Yankees couldn't do anything against Porcello, but Porcello drops to 14 as the Jays knock him around. But this game is really more highlighted by what Mookie Betts did as he continues to strengthen his case for the MVP. In a game that J.D. Martinez hit number 35, and he's up to 99 RBIs. But in the same game, Mookie Betts goes 4-for-4 with a cycle and hitting a solo shot in the 9th inning, top of the 9th inning, for the Red Sox only run in the 9th inning, 8-5 loss, and he records a cycle. So Mookie Betts continues to be a big story. That was his 27th home run. All this production out of the leadoff spot. He's hitting .347. He has 27 homers, missed about 2-plus weeks of the season, 59 RBIs. I'll tell you, that MVP race is fascinating, and it will continue to be fascinating when you look at what's going on with those two players, with some of the other players that I've mentioned. So it will continue to be a fascinating race. Of course, Mike Trout, notwithstanding, Michael Nelson Trout, and those couple of Indians there, a pair of Indians, Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor, and then probably your 6th guy, Chris Crush Davis, will hit his 40-plus home runs and wind up with probably 120 knocked in with the Oakland Athletics, who are looking more and more solid for that second wild card, with the Yankees pretty much locked into the first. So, although the Athletics have played great baseball of late, but the Blue Jays did actually defeat the Red Sox, and they knocked around Porcello as they hit 2 home runs off him. They scored 7 runs in 4 innings off Rick Porcello, who had a rough game. So you have that. And one of the more underrated baseball players, well, at least one of the more underappreciated players this year, at least the guy that's produced for the Toronto Blue Jays with Josh Donaldson seemingly out for the year and he's about to hit free agency. Teoscar Hernandez is a 25-year-old outfielder, plays left field for the Blue Jays. He had his 18th home run. He's got 18 home runs and 45 RBIs. Kid from the Dominican Republic. He's been a productive player for the Toronto Blue Jays. So, a guy just to keep an eye open for came over from the Astros. Maybe we'll look up what that trade exactly was because I can't remember it. There are so many trades that happen that it's really hard to remember each one individually. But he's been a pretty productive player, a 25-year-old. Noel Solarte has slumped. His average all the way down to 234. Grichuk also 234, even though he has the 16 home runs. And Travis always on the DL. But I'll tell you what, this Teoscar Hernandez has been a bright spot for the Toronto Blue Jays, who are a bad baseball team. So that's as far as the updates go on the division race. How about let's check a couple of other games of note. A team that desperately needed a win, and they got it, actually. And that would be the Seattle Mariners, the slumping Mariners, able to knock around Justin Verlander. They really knocked him around. James Paxton comes back and pitches a good game for them, his first 10th win. But the Mariners, and Diaz, by the way, has 43 saves, so that leads all baseball. But they hit him around. Haneker of his 19th. Segura of his 9th. And Denard Span was a nice addition. Along with the bullpen pickup. So they knocked around Verlander, who has been lights out lately. Pushes his ERA up to 2.50. Sayo obviously looks like the favorite. Haneker had 4 hits. Haneker's a pretty good player, Mitch Haneker. Denard Span has always been a good productive player, even though he looks so much older than he is. And Segura is a really good player. So the Mariners get a much-needed victory, and they gain half a game on the idle Oakland A's. The Astros losing this game. They're kind of up and down. You know, Verlander only went 2 innings, giving up 6 runs and 3 home runs. So it was just not a good game for him. Osuna, by the way, who apologized, he did pitch an inning and pitched a scoreless inning. So Osuna is back. That's going to help the Astros. The off-the-field stuff, I mean, it's unforgivable anytime you talk about that kind of stuff happening, because it shouldn't happen. It should not, domestic violence should never happen at any time. So he did serve a suspension, and the Blue Jays decided that they would never pitch him again. And I commend that. That's commendable. The fact that they parted with that awful reliever for him, and then he just got absolutely just tattooed by the Red Sox on Wednesday. That's just Ken Giles. I'm talking about Ken Giles, but that's just awful in itself. But you know, hey, I mean, the Yankees did the same thing with Chapman. Chapman had the same kind of issue off the field. Apologized. Yankees still made the trade with the Reds and acquired him. So, I'm just going to say that I'm just going to put this as delicately as I can make mistakes. We all make mistakes. It's whether or not we learn from those mistakes. And I'm hoping that these athletes who have broken the law and done things to women that should never be done have learned a valuable lesson, a life lesson. So, because if they haven't, then if it happens again, then I think it should be a 3 strikes and you're out thing. So, then it should be suspended for 100 games. And then if it happens again, then you're out. I'm serious when it comes to this. I mean, that's some serious stuff when you talk about that off the field. So I'm looking at Teoscar Hernandez, who is a productive player for those Blue Jays. He did not play a lot of games before this year, but he's gotten into 96 games now this year. Actually, no, 94 games, excuse me. And he's closing in on 400 at bats for the, actually 400 plate appearances, I think. And so he'll wind up with over 400 at bats in his first full year. He played parts of three seasons with the Astros, actually parts of two seasons, the Astros and then the Blue Jays last year. So I'm just checking. Okay, so this was a trade that was made at last year's deadline, where he was traded with Nori Aoki for Francisco Laureano, who didn't really have much of an impact on the Blue Jays. I'm sorry, on the Astros. He didn't really have much of an impact. This is the Hard Hits Network. I am Derek Felix. We are 28 minutes in to this live podcast. Already did the Yankees and broke them down. Giancarlo off three straight games of home run. Neil Walker off a home run or pair from each side of the plate, which is always special. And Andujar, number 16, multiple hit game. J.A. Happ going six innings with nine strikeouts. Red Sox actually losing a game, but Mookie benefiting for a cycle. And that J.D. Martinez guy hits his 35th home run and just ends up to 99 RBI. So it's that MVP race. Just, it looks like a two-horse race. It really does. I don't think Mike Trout's going to win it this year, especially with those two guys. All right, now break down a couple of other baseball games that took place over the day. There were a couple of others of note, so I just want to get to those. I know that the Braves lost to the Nats 6-3. The Nats are a weird team. They're a funny team. You know, they look like they're about to take off, and then they lose a couple of games in a row. And they win a game, you know, yesterday or today, 59-56. They won 6-3. Murphy had a couple of hits. Acuña is just a really talented player for the Braves. He has 13 home runs, made another great catch. I'll tell you, he is a really talented player. Freeman had three hits of the game for the Braves. Markakis hit one out. Both Acuña and Markakis went yard. Annabelle Sanchez only pitched two innings, so he must have gotten hurt. So I'll try to find out what happened to Annabelle Sanchez. He's actually pitched really well for the Braves. Under a 3 ERA. How about that? But Gio Gonzalez pitched a good game for the Nats, winning a seventh game, going seven innings. Three strikeouts and a walk and a home run, a run allowed. So the bullpen was a little shaky, a little spotty. They gave up a couple of runs, a run each in the eighth and ninth inning, but 6-3. The Nats are winners. Soto, very talented player with his 40th RBI. Harper with a day off, actually. Rendon with a couple of hits, an RBI. Murphy, I said, two hits, an RBI. Trey Turner with two hits. Trey Turner is a guy that I think should hit for a higher average. He's hitting .271. I think he should be hitting a little bit higher. God, he's got a lot of talent. He's got a world of talent. He's got a lot of speed. So the Braves lose half a game and fall to a game and a half behind the Phillies, who were idle. The Indians, winners, they get a run, a walk-off run in the ninth inning off Addison Reed, who has been pretty bad for the Twins. I thought he would be a good addition, but that has not worked out. Andrew Miller is back, though. Andrew Miller picked up the win. I think Lindor had the walk-off hit. He had three hits in the game. So the Indians, you know, they're just rolling along. They're 14 games on 500. They're, what are they, up to 11 games up on the Twins? Something to that, or 12 games. Actually, it's 11. Brewers lose the final game against the Padres at home in pretty bad fashion. Nabel, their closer, might not be their closer pretty soon. Josh Hader might start being the closer. He has 3 saves. He was awful, and he was taken out of the game. And then the Padres played some home run derby, scoring 6 runs in the 9th inning. Brewers in the game the Brewers led, they led 4-2 in the 9th inning, and the Brewers lose a bad game, very bad game. To Renfro, who was back with the Padres with 4 runs knocked in, including a big blast in that 9th inning off Joaquin Soria, who replaced the ineffective Corey Nebel. And you had also Reyes as well hitting a home run. So very bad performance by Nebel. Brewers lose a half game to the Cubs and are now 2 back of the Cubs. And I think it's 4 in the loss column. So yeah, that. Not much else really. Did I mention the Mariners? Yeah, I mentioned the Mariners. So they did win. And the other game of note, the Dodgers go into Colorado and they explode. They scored 2 in the 7th. The Rockies came back with 4 in the 7th to go ahead 5-3. But the Dodgers then 2 in the 8th to tie it, 3 in the 9th. As the Dodgers win a slugfest 8-5 in Colorado. As they gain a half game on the Diamondbacks, and I think that ties them again, or are they just half a game out? So just got some notes here from this game. Chris Iannetta, yeah, he still plays some catcher. His 8 home run, 3 hits for Nolan Arenado for the Rocky side. Arenado also booted a ball. Well, not booted, but had a throwing error. He doesn't make a lot of errors, but he's a great player. Wade Davis was awful. Maybe it's time for them to just shut Wade Davis down. He's just been terrible this year. Okay, so Kenley Jansen went to hospital tonight with an irregular heartbeat. He's flying to LA to get checked out. So Kenley Jansen, the Dodgers closer, is being checked out for an irregular heartbeat. So that's hopefully he's okay. So that's a note right there. Brian Dozier continues to just, he always is a guy that just finishes strong. I told you about this. I told you what he did a couple of years ago where he hit all those home runs, went berserk, hit like 30 home runs in like the last like 2 months. He hit his 19th home run. I think he's got 3 home runs already for the Dodgers, and he's up to like 10 or 11 RBIs. So he hits his 19th home run. That was part of that rally. And Chris Taylor also hit a home run. And Chris Taylor's had a real good second half. Hit number 13 off Wade Davis. Wade Davis is just awful this year. He was really good for the Cubs, but he's awful this year. Jock Peterson hit an opposite field blast, which gave the Dodgers a lead. Jock Peterson had a good year. I have to give him credit. 18 home runs, only 45 RBIs, but he bats. He doesn't play all the time, and he was a pinch hitter in this game. He usually bats the top of the order, and he does most of his damage against righties. Machado, with 2 more hits, did get a hat trick and strikeouts, but 2 more hits for him. Justin Turner, with a pair of hits. Cody Bellinger, remember him. He hit all those home runs last year. He hit his 19th home run, so he's not going to hit 38, 39 home runs like he did last year as a rookie. Where he won Rookie of the Year. It's been a little bit of a down year for him, but he's still going to wind up with solid production. Like to do something about that average, I'm sure. Muncy, remember him? He hit his 25th home run for the Dodgers. So a pinch hit home run. So the Dodgers do a lot of damage off the Colorado Rockies bullpen, Wade Davis mostly. So the Dodgers get a W. They're 64-52. So let's just update those standings. Yankees are up to 72-42, 30 games over 500, but they play in the AL East, and the Red Sox are 81-35 and are on pace for 110-111 wins. So they're 8-L and 7 in the loss column. These teams still have 2 more series left in September, about a week apart. But unless the Yankees somehow slice it down and get it down to about four or five games, yeah, they're going to be the wild card team. They're going to be the top wild card, barring any problems. Judge, the update's not good. He's still hurting, so he's not ready to swing a bat. So his status remains uncertain. Yeah, the longer this goes, they have to be careful. It's Aaron Judge here, so they're going to be cautious. Jacarl's doing what Jacarl does. Hicks is doing what he has to do. There's no reason to really rush him. Obviously, we talk about an injury like that. You got to be careful. So caution is the best thing to do right now. And hopefully Judge will come back healthy in mid-September. Sanchez should be back before then. All right, Indians by 11 games, running away with that division. It was just a bit awful. The Astros are 4.5 up on the Oakland A's. The Oakland A's do have an outside shot here at the division. I don't think that Oakland can steal this division, but they're 4 in the loss column. Astros are 73-43. The Oakland Athletics are 68-47. The Mariners did gain a half game. They're up to 66-50. Robinson Cano is back. He's doing his assignment right now. You want to call it a rehab site, whatever you want to call it, conditioning, as he's in single A. He's actually playing some first base, learning to play first. I don't know if that's going to work with Robbie Cano. I mean, Cano is excellent second baseman. He's played some second, he's playing some first, played a lot of first, and Justin Cadet, and even some third. So that's your update there. Mariners 66-50. The A's are 16-47. So it's three in the loss column, 2.5. The Angels are 50-58, but they're way out of it. And Trout's been hurt. He's missed, I think, the last 5 or 6 games. NL East, with the loss, the Braves fall to a game behind the Phillies. Now they all have both have 50 losses. Braves have played 2 fewer games, though. The Nats are up to 59-56 as they try to hang in there and hang around and maybe play themselves into some kind of contention, but they have to go on a run. 5.5 out in the division. They're still hanging around for the second wild card. And you have the Mets, who are just awful, and you have the Marlins, who are even worse. As I said, the Cubs being idle and the Brewers having that meltdown by Nabel, 4 difference in the loss column, and that's the difference in the standings because the Cubs have played 4 fewer games. 48 losses to 52 losses, 66 wins for each team. The Cards, 6.5 back, but right in the second wild card contention, with the Pirates a half game behind them. And the Pirates are blowing out the Giants, so they're going to improve to 60-56. And they still think they have a chance at the playoffs, a long shot, but they think they can still compete for it. The Rockies have lost 3 in a row. That's who the Rockies are. I mean, they win, they go on a streak, and then they play bad. 60-55 are the Rockies, tied with the Cardiac Cards. Played a lot better since they dismissed Mike Matheny. And then you have a flat-footed tie in the NL West now. Dodgers gaining that half a game back, and 64-52 apiece for both the Diamondbacks and Dodgers. And the wild card, as it stands right now, would be Milwaukee, 66-52 with 1 spot. And by percentage points, the Atlanta Braves with a 5.54 percentage, 62-50, would be the second wild card, with the Dodgers at 64-52. So that's your baseball. All right, let's move on. There was some NFL, or was some preseason action. The preseason is back. And the NFL, of course, for football fans, they're excited to see some of the younger players. And that's what it's really all about. It's not really about, the regulars. The one thing I will say, and I said it early in the show, is just make sure that these guys stay healthy. because football is just so unforgiving when it comes to injuries. It's so unforgiving. The Giants took on the Cleveland Browns. They lost to the Cleveland Browns at MetLife Stadium. I was going to say Giants Stadium, but no. MetLife Stadium, 20-10. A couple of notables from this game from the Cleveland side: Tyrod Taylor, the ex-Buffalo Bill, a perfect 5-for-5 with a touchdown, and Baker Mayfield completed 11 passes and threw for 2 touchdowns and over 200 yards. So, number one overall pick, making a good first impression for Cleveland. They're able to get touchdowns, and the Giants, well, they're the Giants. When it comes to, so it's not so much that the Giants are like that. The one positive, of course, was the big run. His first run from scrimmage, Saquon Barkley, very highly rated running back, the guy that I love, 39-yard run burst from scrimmage. So breaking tackles and 5 carries for 43 yards, but the 39-yard run is what sticks. Eli did not get too many reps, 4 out of 7 for 26 yards. Davis Webb struggled a little bit. That's a little bit expected. Davis Webb did not play at all last year. That whole thing with McAdoo was ridiculous. Webb was 9 out of 22 for 70 yards, so it will probably be a little bit of a struggle for, you know, he's going to have to get himself into quick shape here and just, it'll be hard, you know, because he's now supposed to be the backup. So we'll see if he can fulfill some expectations. We'll see how that works out. But, you know, the Giants did a nice job on the ground here. I looked at the stats here. You had Barkley with the 43. Robert Martin out of Rutgers, undrafted, 5 carries for 39 yards. So he was pretty impressive. And you also have Jalen Simmons from South Carolina State, 7 for 38 and a touchdown for 3 yards out. So the Giants were able to run the football. It's something they couldn't do much of, that they have been able to do consistently over the past, like, 2-3 years. And I really think when I think about Big Blue, I think, obviously, two things. Ball control, being able to run that football and open up that play action, whichever quarterback it's been, whether it was Phil Sims, Jeff Hostetler, or Eli. I mean, you have to be able to run the ball and have that offensive line protect the quarterback. And I also think of defense. And I'm hoping that the defense will be better this year with some of the additions, a healthier Landon Collins, and a more motivated Eli Apple. So those are the pluses. Odell Beckham, that's expected to not play, although he looked good in the warm-ups, making a little bit of a nice catch. So not much of a surprise. So, I mean, it is preseason. Baker Mayfield, as I said, 11 out of 20 with the 2 touchdowns, 212 for the Browns. I think the Browns are going to be a interesting team to follow. The Giants defense, though, they've always been good at stopping the run, and they added some more players to do that. And Chubb, Nick Chubb from Georgia, who went in the second round very early, the Browns decided to get their running back as well. He was stuffed, 15 carries for only 11 yards, so that's less than a yard per carry. The Browns had some problems running the football. Baker Mayfield ran for 13, which tied Days for the lead. Duke Johnson's really a receiver. I like Duke. I've always liked Duke, you know, from the U. But he is who he is. He's going to make plays out of the backfield and get open and make a lot of catches. Don't forget that this Browns team added Jarvis Landry. That will help as well. They have some talent. Josh Gordon right now, he's being treated for anxiety and depression. So he is in counseling. So I don't know what that means for him, but I obviously wish him the best. Somebody that suffers anxiety and depression, I know what it's about. I hope that he will be okay, and I'll be back for the Browns, and he'll stay away from getting himself in trouble again. All right. There were a lot of games. I'm only going to highlight one other game because it was a little bit of a grudge match between two former players. And of course, I'd be talking about Cam Newton, the former league MVP for the Carolina Panthers, and Calvin Benjamin, who had some not-so-choice words for his quarterback. Felt that he was maybe misused. You know, who knows? I mean, maybe that's more about how the play call, or maybe that's more about coaching than anything. Carolina likes to run the football. Benjamin was their number one receiver, and he'll be a nice fit in Buffalo, Western New York. He did get a touchdown in the game, 4 receptions for 59 yards, including a touchdown reception from Nathan Peterman. Nathan Peterman, remember how bad he was? So he was 7 for 7 on that touchdown drive, and he finished 9 of 10 with a touchdown and 119, and I think he also had an INT. AJ McCarron, who I accurately predicted would go to the Bills, 7 of 10 with a 116. And don't forget about Josh Allen. Josh Allen got into the game, 9 for 19, 116, and a touchdown. So another one of those highly rated quarterbacks that went very high. The future for the Buffalo Bills. AJ McCarron is supposed to be the starter, or expected to be. But Josh Allen is a guy that the Bills have to be excited about. Before the game, Cam Newton tried to seek out Kelvin Benjamin and maybe try to hash out the issues, and Kelvin Benjamin wanted no part of it. And I don't know. I think that Cam Newton, look, I've never been a Cam Newton guy, but I think that says more about Cam Newton than it does about Kelvin Benjamin. And Newton was trying to do the right thing, and Benjamin just dissed him. So it is what it is. There's sometimes you have those grudges. It just happens that way sometimes. Player changes teams, and there's just bitterness for some reason. It seems to be common with football players. Not really sure why. I think Carolina can still be a good team, but they did lose a really good receiver. You still have Cam Newton there. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey will probably need to carry a little bit more, meaning he'll need to run effectively as well as catch the ball out of the backfield. I mean, we know he could do both, but he was a better pass catcher. How will he do? Will he run the ball more effectively? What about their receiving core? So, there are some questions. DJ Moore was a guy they drafted out of Maryland, a guy that people are high, 4 catches for 75 yards. So we're looking for him to step up with Calvin Benjamin no longer there. And the Bills, they could have a pretty exciting team. You know, they finally got back in the playoffs last year. I think that I'm not saying that they're on the Patriots level, but I do think they can be a playoff team again and maybe win 10 games this year. So I'm still pretty high on the Buffalo Bills. So that's what I will say. I'm just looking around here. Eagles lose 31-14 to the Steel Curtain. The Steelers, of course, are in a very tough situation, dicey situation with their star running back who is going to leave. He's going to leave. That's fairly obvious, especially when they offer him an extension. He doesn't want any part of it. So this happens. It happens. And it seems to happen a lot when it comes to players. Le'Veon Bell is a very talented player, certainly, but Pittsburgh Steelers do have Jalen Samuels, and maybe Samuels could have replaced him. They have Antonio Brown, and Bell wants a lot of money. So, and Bell, how many more years will he be productive for? He's certainly one of the best, if not the best, running back in the game, but he's at his mid-20s, his mid to late 20s. So we'll see. We'll see how things go there. I'm not sure about the Steelers this year. Is this a distraction? It's kind of unnecessary for it, but these things happen. Distractions are part of sports, and it's how the teams deal with it within the locker room, off the field, even on the field, that goes a long way to determining, you know, how, especially football, how successful they'll be on that field. So we'll see how things go there for the Steelers. I think that is an improved division. I do think the Browns will be better. And I think the Bengals, I don't know how good they'll be. I expect them to be a little better than they were last year. The Ravens, it's a flip of a coin with the Ravens. I don't know. I don't know how much Joe Flacco has left. And, there are question marks. There are certainly some question marks with the Ravens. So, last year they were a first place team. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure about them. Lamar Jackson is the rookie, obviously. He's a very interesting guy to listen to. Doesn't seem to be the brightest bulb, but if he learns, he can learn the game. And it's interesting because they have Robert Griffin III, Emmer for him. Yeah, he's actually in camp, competing right now. So it's an interesting time. It's an interesting time. We'll just put it that way. Got a few minutes here left here on this podcast edition. I am Derek Felix, your host of the Hard Hits Network. This is the podcast. Want to wrap it up with a little bit on the trade of the century. No, it wasn't the proposed Ted Williams for Joe DiMaggio trade. That didn't happen. There have been plenty of great trades in other sports. But when you trade arguably the greatest player, although my dad will say Bobby Orr, and I've looked at Bobby Orr, and maybe he was. Maybe he impacted it even more. But when you trade Wayne Gretzky, his prime, because you realize that you're not going to be able to afford him. And Peter Pocklington realized this. Well, it's time. The Oilers were so successful as a franchise with those Stanley Cups. Wayne Gretzky, unbelievable. I mean, just unbelievable what he did. In the 80s. And yes, it was a little more freewheeling. Goalies weren't as sound. Defenses weren't as good. It was more wide open. But it was a very exciting time, I think, for hockey. Wayne Gretzky with the record 92 goals as a 21-year-old. Over 200 points. 212 points in 1981-82, still a record. He was 208 points in 84-85, 73 goals in 80 games, 135 assists, plus 100. Wayne Gretzky, the great one, went over 200 points four times, including actually his record that he was actually in 86. That was the year that they lost that heartbreaker to the Calgary Flames. A series where Steve Smith accidentally went to play a puck and played it right off the back of his goalie and in, and they lost the series. Had they not lost, I mean, maybe the Canadiens don't win that year with Patrick Roy, a rookie Patrick Roy, and rookie Claude Lemieux and Chris Chelios. Maybe the Oilers, maybe they actually win one. 2, 3, 4, 5 straight cups. They could have won 5 straight instead of the 4
that they wound up winning. 215 points for Gretzky in 85-86. He was unbelievable. Even when I got to see him as a Ranger in those final years, when he decided to sign with the Rangers and team up with Mark Messier, and they made that run to the conference final, Gretzky with that hat trick that he had against the Florida Panthers, and even in the 5-game defeat to the Flyers, the one game that they won, he recorded a hat trick. And then they lost the next 4 games in a row. But Wayne Gretzky put up 97 points at age 36 in 82 games with the Rangers and had 72 assists. Gretzky was 90 points in 82 games in 97-98 as a 37-year-old when the Rangers were bad. In his last year, he only scored 9 goals in 70 games. He did still wind up with 53 assists and 62 points. But it was time. He realized it. Gretzky went to the LA Kings on August 9th, 1988, 30 years ago. And a trade that nobody believed. Nobody believed it could happen, but it did. Because Peter Pocklington realized he wasn't going to be able to afford Wayne Gretzky when his contract expired the following year. And he needed to recoup money, and that recoup cash, and that was the most important thing. Bruce McNall, back 30 for 30, I think that was the first one ESPN did back in 2009. Still is unbelievable to watch. I like the part in the beginning with the lights where you hear the announcer for the Kings. They said it was the trade of the century, and they introduced Wayne Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky, the great one. And the crowd is going absolutely crazy at the Forum, at the Great Western Forum. And you hear that organ. You don't hear enough organs anymore of hockey. And Gretzky comes out. How about that going away press conference when the trade was made? Gretzky cried and Messier was there. It's really unbelievable when you think about it. Wayne Gretzky is the greatest. I mean, he really is. I mean, you look at the way, you look at how he's just so cool. He really defined cool. He was perfect to go to the LA Kings. And you know what the ironic part is? That the Rangers, they were interested. They were very interested. It was Phil Esposito and acquiring Wayne Gretzky. But it was the LA Kings who got him. And it was probably better for the sport when it came to the just popularizing it. California, going to the LA Kings and making them hip. And without it, there would have been no expansion. The expansion wouldn't have happened the way it did. You wouldn't have had that San Jose Sharks, who have those cool teal uniforms, that great logo, the Shark Tank, and you have Anaheim Ducks with Anaheim Mighty Ducks, and I still think it was the Mighty Ducks. I don't think you would have had that movie. You wouldn't have a team in Las Vegas. There wouldn't have been a game in Caesar's Palace either. There's so much that I could say. This is the end of the live portion. I will go a little further. Listen to Overtime. Tune into any future shows at www.blogtalkradio.com/hardhits21. And you can listen to any of our podcasts in the podcast format and listen to any show. I am Derek Flex Felix here. Derek Felix at 1 o'clock in the morning in New York City on August the 10th of 2018. This is the Hard Hits Network. This is the podcast. And I'm talking about the great trade, the trade of the century, well, 20th century. Wayne Gretzky, a guy that has 49 different records, that has more assists than any other player had points, with the 1,963 assists, the 894 goals, amazing, 2,857 points, astonishing, a plus 520 for his career. The 92 goals, the 50 goals in 39 games, all sorts of records. What epitomizes Gretzky is just, you never really saw him have a bad moment. What I mean by that is, you know, there are so many players, so many star athletes that have egos and sometimes say things that are controversial. And I don't think it takes a brain surgeon to figure out where I'm going with that. So I'm not going to mention any of her names because there's no point. Wayne Gretzky is just the epitome of class. I don't think I ever saw Gretzky say anything that was just awful. Although, of course, Devils fans like Chris Wassow might disagree because of the assessment that Gretzky had about the Devils, who were a really bad team. Back when the Oilers played them, he called them a Mickey Mouse organization. So that was very blunt. And it took Lou Amarillo from Providence College to turn them around, along with some great moves to turn them into an excellent franchise and a dominant one for a while with those three Stanley Cups and those Stanley Cup appearances they had. And I think it's five total. And Martin Brodeur became arguably the all-time best netminder, although I still put Dominic Hasek over him. And I still put Patrick Roy over him because Roy outdo Marty and played and won in all three decades. Although Brodeur did come up in the 90s and he did play three decades himself. He just didn't win in 2012. Ironically, the Devils lost to the LA Kings, something that the Rangers also did. It's just weird. It's just funny. What's the only thing that Wayne Gretzky didn't do who got into Bruce Boudreau's head? You know, we could really promote this and we could really popularize the game even more. And that's where the whole Caesars Palace thing came, where the Rangers took on the LA Kings in Vegas. I mean, boy, oh boy, that was the first outdoor game. Gretzky, he was the one behind it. He was the first hockey player to host Saturday Night Live. Who else? Number 99, the great one, Wayne Gretzky. And what a Saturday Night Live that was. It's just unbelievable. He had the model wife, obviously, Janet Jones. And he's just wonderful. He's such a great ambassador for the sport. You know how everybody talks about Michael Jordan? About how great. Yes, on the court. Off the court? At times he could be... let's just say he's not Wayne Gretzky. Michael Jordan's a lot more flawed than Wayne Gretzky ever was. I don't know if it's just because of how he was raised, his dad, Walter Gretzky, being from Brampton, being... And of course, his home is at Brampton, Ontario, and the great story of Brian Sehorn, where he went on vacation, and went to Toronto with John Herbst and Tim Daddio, and John Herbst being the huge oil fan, the biggest Gretzky fan that I know. Why don't we try to find where Gretzky lives? And they took this Wayne Gretzky, I think, how do you term it? Yeah, there's this Gretzky Parkway. Why don't we take this? And somehow they found the house. And lo and behold, Walter Gretzky answered the door. And they wound up with autographed Gretzky stuff. I mean, that's unbelievable. God almighty, that was a long time ago. But it's still a great story. It's a great story. Yeah, it's funny because I remember... Back in the heyday, when the NHL used to hit up baseball card shows, we'd go through about 100 or however much money we go through. I bought a synthetic box, so I think he might have bought one too. What did I get? What was the best thing I got? First pack, I pulled a Gretzky autograph card. Unbelievable. I still have it to this day. It's not going anywhere.
I have a lot of Wayne Gretzky cards, actually. So I wish I had Wayne Gretzky's rookie card, though, or second-year card, or his third-year card. God almighty. Wayne Gretzky. You know, when you think about the trade, press conferences, Wayne Gretzky doing in his former team after the Kings were 21 out of 22, as Wayne Gretzky put it in the 30 for 30, the ESPN, turn it around. In a league where 16 teams made the playoffs when there were only 22 teams, and the Kings ranked 21st out of 22. That trade was really about money. The Oilers couldn't survive. Peter Pocklington knew it. He had to make the most unpopular decision. And all these things. Once Ather was at Gretzky's here, you know, for an hour. And if you don't want to, you don't have to do this. You want to block the trade, you can block the trade. All this stuff happened. It's pretty crazy. And the rumors started circulating in the Stanley Cup Finals. And Gretzky didn't believe his father, Walter. It's crazy to think. It really is. You know, even more interesting is that when Gretzky signed, he signed as an underage free agent by Indianapolis. So he was with Indianapolis first of the WHA. And 110 points, 46 goals, 64 assists as an 18-year-old. And then the Oilers, the Edmonton Oilers, they wound up trading for him. They traded for him. That's pretty amazing in itself. Traded to Edmonton, WHA, by Indianapolis, WHA, with Eddie Mia, actually I've heard of him, and Peter Driscoll for $700,000 in cash and future considerations. Can you imagine that? Traded, not by himself, but with Eddie Mia and Peter Driscoll for $700,000, which was a lot back then, 1978, in future considerations. Reclaimed by Edmonton as an underage junior prior to expansion draft. So by the Oilers, got put into the NHL, along with the Quebec Nordiques and the Hartford Whalers. And I think the Winnipeg Jets, those were the four teams of WHA that came over, that survived. For a decade, he ruled hockey like no other player that the sport had ever seen. Rewrote the way the game was played, the vision that he had. Always two or three steps ahead of everybody else. All those goals, the passing. There's a highlight where he on a breakaway and he just does in one swoop a spinning spinorama 360 backhand goal. A move that was popularized by Denny Savard, who was a great player in his own right. But you know, but that goal, that was so smooth the way he did it. He did it so quickly. It changed the angle and probably just surprised the goalie and scored on it. I saw Gretzky at the end. And still, that hat trick against the Panthers at the Garden was electrifying, and that, especially that third goal where he faked it a couple of times and Sam Rosen, you know, calls the couple of fakes, he shoots and scores, and he put it top shelf. Little magic left in the great one in his final postseason, as it turned out, because the Rangers did not know how to manage anything at the end when Mark Bessier left for Vancouver. Those were dark days. Oh, man. I just can't imagine. But I'll tell you, I can't imagine having to trade Wayne Gretzky. I can't imagine having to trade him. You know, Mario Lemieux never got traded. He retired once, came back, Penguins twice. After, really,
after they lost enough games so they could go first overall to them to beat out the Devils. And then again, when he came back from bankruptcy, Wayne Gretzky. I don't know. I mean, the images that you see, maybe that's the most magnifying thing to me. And seeing Gretzky walk dressed up for that 30 for 30 and walk back on that ice. It's empty. There he is, empty. I just like the whole setup is just perfect. You know, it's just so perfect. We'll talk about it and just everything about. Then of course, Hollywood. All the stars came out to see Wayne, and they became such a hot ticket. Sylvester Stallone, Michael J. Fox, Alyssa Milano, so many stars. They wanted tickets. Everybody wanted to see him. Yeah. You know, the final time that Wayne Gretzky won the Hart Trophy was 1988-89, his first season with the LA Kings at age 28. When he put up 168 points in 78 games with the Kings and got them into the playoffs. 54 goals, 114 assists. And then they faced off against those Oilers. They still had Mark Messier. They still had a pretty good team. But they didn't have the great one. And Gretzky rallied the Kings. From 3-1 down, from 3-1 deficit, serious deficit, to stun the Oilers. Yep. That's what happened. I think still, back to that series, that Stanley Cup final, when Gretzky was still, he was kind of in that twilight. He's still great, still a dominant player for the Kings, and they reached the Stanley Cup final when they upset the Toronto Maple Leafs when some Canadian writers wrote off Gretzky. And then Gretzky, boy, did he make them pay. He went to Toronto and he had that hat trick and outperformed Dougie Gilmore in what was a great series. The Maple Leafs were the better team, but it didn't matter. Wayne Gretzky is Wayne Gretzky. And they outscored the Maple Leafs in that game 7 to advance. Unbelievable. So actually game 7 was apologized. I believe it was. They didn't have all ice. Toronto was better. So Gretzky had how many points? 40 points. 40 friggin' points at age 32 in those 93 playoffs. 15 goals in 24 games, 25 assists, 40 points. He hadn't produced that kind of magic since he was 27 in his final year for the Oilers when they led them to the repeat, their second repeat in 5 years. Their second repeat in four, but in three, but 4 years. God almighty. You know, Gretzky, as a 24-year-old, put up 47 points for the Oilers' second straight cup. When they had Messier, when they had Gretzky, Messier, Jari Kari, the Finnish, the original Finnish finisher. That was a great two-way player. Glenn Anderson, Kevin Lowe, Paul Coffey. Coffey was the first guy to go. He went during the 87-88 season to the Pittsburgh Penguins. And they got back a guy by the name of Craig Simpson in that trade. He was part of that trade. Craig Simpson, who was a good finisher and actually became his roommate and trained with Gretzky. And it's interesting hearing Craig Simpson interviewed. And we were getting ready to train, and Gretzky had to tell him that it was probably going to happen in the next 24 hours that he was going to get traded. It was really going to happen. And he could have stopped it, but he felt that it went too far at that point. They had gone too far at that point. And he said that if he did it all, yeah, he would have done it in a second. Peter Pocklington is looked at as the bad guy, and he, some of those quotes that he said about Gretzky's wife, Janet Jones, that was ridiculous and obviously not true. It's just damage control. Glenn Sather understood that. You know, Glenn Sather was a very cocky guy, but, you know, when you watch him talk about that whole situation, you can feel the emotion behind it. You really can. You feel it. Lane was amazing. I mean, he really was amazing. You know, the Kings never, you know, they never got back to where they were in 93. And if Marty McSorley doesn't have that illegal stick, which Bontorell used to get a two-man advantage and tie the game up, who knows? Could have been up 2-0, having won both games in Montreal with that crowd in LA rocking. Maybe Gretzky would have led the Kings to that Stanley Cup with Luke Robitaille, a great cast of characters there. Thomas Sandstrom too, Tony Granato. Wow, man, oh man. Yeah, if you look at the trade itself, I mean, you know what the interesting part of the trade is, that there were so many pieces that moved. August 9th, 1988. It was Gretzky traded to Los Angeles from Edmonton with Mike Krzyzewski, a solid scoring forward, and defenseman Marty McSorley, who became Gretzky's running mate and a guy who just stuck up for him and also put up his offense, picked up when he went to the Kings. McSorley was a pretty good defenseman. People forget that. You know, we got the washed-up version when he came to the Rangers in that very bad trade that Neil Smith made, which was really orchestrated by Marc Messier. Because they felt they needed more toughness, and that was just a total, it was just mismanagement, especially when they faced the Penguins, the Mew Yager Penguins. They just put on a show in that second round. And it was for Jimmy Carson. So it was three players, Gretzky included. Jimmy Carson was a really big scorer back then. Martin Gelinas. Martin Gelinas, he had a really good career, but he did not stay with the Oilers too long. Los Angeles' first round choices in 1989, which was later traded. The 89 was traded to the Devils. Then they selected Jason Miller. He also got a 1991 first-round pick and turned into a guy by the name of Martin Rutschinski. Actually, Jonah, he was around. He was around. He was part of that kid line, I believe. He was around for a while, but Rutschinski wasn't. He moved around a lot. And 1993, a first-round pick that never panned out, Nick Stauskas. Entry rights and $15 million in cash. Whew. A lot of money. And as Sather said, he didn't think it was a good deal. It wasn't. They probably could have got more. There was no choice. They had to do it. They had to do it. They didn't have a choice. And there was really no choice. And that's all there is to say, really, about it. You know, Wayne Gretzky, he was hockey. He recorded 65 career hat tricks. His first one, 1978, December 12th. I had just turned 2 4 days prior. Recorded 5 in the West. I'm sorry, in the WHA. And then with Everton in the NHL, he just started in 1980, and it just kept going like a machine. Hat tricks, 6, all the way up to 55. December 6, 1987, turn 11, 2 days later, it's Minnesota North Stars. And then they recorded another, it looks like another 8 or 9 with the LA Kings. Seven, actually. That includes that game at Toronto. 5-4 playoffs. Did off Felix Poffin behind the net. Nobody was better at that than Wayne. That was his office back there. And 3 for the Rangers. 2 in that memorable 97 postseason run, final run with Messier, before he made the mistake of leaving. The Panther game and that Flyer game. 5-4 win. Actually, I forgot about the hat trick that he had against the Canucks at Vancouver. It was when the Rangers were off, they went to visit Vancouver. And Messier and Gretzky scored his final hat trick in Vancouver. And you know, at the time, you know, he puts up the hat trick and you think, well, that's his way of saying this is his team now. But they just weren't good enough. They weren't good enough. They made too many mistakes. They made a lot of mistakes. Things really changed for the worse. Wayne was amazing. He really was. Anything he wanted, anything he could do anything out there. He wasn't imposing. He was 6 feet, 185, but you know what? Nobody thought the game better than Wayne Gretzky. Nobody saw the game like him. He didn't have the size of Lemieux or the brute strength of Eric Lindros, who could have been so much better if not for the Cousins. Could have been one of the all-time greats, or Forsberg. And you could go down the list, Phil Esposito, Marcel Dion, Stan Mikita, who just passed away, or some of those great Canadians, Keith LaFleur, Rocket Richard. There are so many great players. Crosby. I think Crosby, to me, is grittier. He has this unbelievable hand-eye coordination that's unlike anybody. Wayne, I mean, man. 10 scoring titles, 9 league MVPs, hearts, 2 Conn Smythe, 15-time All-Star, 4-time Stanley Cup winner, 5 Pearsons, Occupy players. Number 99, the great one. Wow. I mean, what do you say? I think the thing that always got to me was this press conference. I couldn't believe it really happened. Him crying at the press conference, and then him being introduced. And, of course, you had the pictures of it on cards because it was so huge. It was just so huge. It was so enormous. What it did for expansion for the NHL and the popularity. That could have been the Rangers. Apparently, they offered more, but McGarden decided not to do it. That's crazy. It really is crazy. What Mark Messi wound up on the Ranger, I don't know. There are so many questions. What if the Rangers had won the rights to Eric Lindros? And if they had Eric Lindros, what if instead of the Flyers, Kovalev and Bay and all these and Zubov, all these guys had gone over to Quebec. Well, but you had Lindros with Mark Messier. How many cups could the Rangers have won? What they wound up winning the one in 1984. You could look at so many what ifs. I just never thought I would see Wayne Gretzky wear another jersey. Although I have to say that LA Kings jersey, whether it was that cool white with the gray and the black mix, or the dark classic dark black with the gray, amazing. White. Wow. 30 years later. You're still not a better guy to be interviewed. He's still the most compelling guy. He's the star of stars. He's amazing. I mean, I look at Wayne and I see perfection. I guess that's what this overtime was all about. Paying tribute to what Wayne Gretzky was and always will be. And legends never die. And his legend will continue to be the same. Everybody knows Wayne Gretzky. Everybody knows how remarkable he was. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, the Oilers did wind up winning a Stanley Cup after Gretzky left in 1990. Mark Messier led. But, you know, the real interesting thing for me Messier had 31 points. He had 9 goals. Everybody talks about what he did against the Blackhawks, how he took over that series. You know who had 31 points also? Craig Simpson. He had scored 16 goals and was terrific for the Oilers. So they don't win the Stanley Cup. They don't win that fifth cup without that kid, Craig Simpson. Pretty ironic the way things worked out. Yeah. That Craig Simpson kid, when we got in the coffee trade, Craig Simpson was a pretty good finisher. The injuries, of course, did it in his career, and we had to retire at age 28. Eventually traded to the Sabres for basically nothing because he was basically finished. But more the kid line. You know, when they used Jimmy Carson and they wound up trading him they traded him to Detroit, and they got back a guy by the name of Adam Graves. They got back a guy by the name of Joe Murphy before the whole story of Joe Murphy's skates being tossed in Hudson, and this guy by the name of Peter Klima. So, and it's amazing the way things work out sometimes. The Oilers don't win the Stanley Cup without that move, actually. I think that's the most unique part of the whole Gretzky trade is that, you know, most of the guys, they didn't stay. Carson scored 49, had 100 points at age 20. And then the next year, after 3 points in 4 games, he was traded to the Detroit Red Wings, 89-90. And he still put up a couple of 30-goal years, a couple of 20-plus, but he was the same guy. They used him. They used him, and he was done. He was done by the age of 27 with Hartford. as he bounced around after some okay years. So it's interesting the way things work sometimes. He was traded. A deal in which they made and got Klima, Joe Murphy, Adam Graves, and some guy by the name of Jeff Sharples. Traded with Kevin McClellan, November 2nd, 1989, and Edmonton's fifth rounder. You know, you can talk all you want and criticize Glenn Sather for the fact that he never delivered a cup on Broadway. And they came close. He made trades that he thought he had to do, and it just didn't work out. But I'll tell you, Glenn Sather, the Oilers, he was a mastermind when it came to trades. Well, the mid-90s were not so good to him. Made a lot of mistakes with some of those draft picks. But still, it is pretty amazing when you look at what the Oilers were able to accomplish. And yet, I remember the 93 Stanley Cup a lot more than the 1990 Stanley Cup. Maybe because I was a few years older. But, or maybe because it was the Kings and it wasn't the Oilers who I didn't like. And it was Gretzky. So, I guess the Canadiens. And, of course, I was rooting for Gretzky. I don't think there were many people rooting for Montreal to win that series. But with Kelly Rudio and his cool hair and that's how those Kings were. That was a fun team. That was a fun team to follow. They really were. Yeah, here's the amazing thing. They were 39-35-10 in the Smythe division, but that was enough to get them in with Barry Melrose as their coach, 88 points. You had Wayne, you had Lucky Luke, you had, I forgot about Robert Blake. Obviously, Rob Blake was turned into one of the best defensemen. Overtime, 125 points in 84 games. He came back and played 45 games. He was coming back, I think, from back surgery. He had 65 points in the 45 games. So then he had that great playoff. Curry had 87 points. Granato. And they got Curry also from Edmonton. Blake and Coffey. And Coffey was on that team. Coffey was on a lot of teams. Moved around quite a bit. With the Penguins. For their two cups. Thomas Santrum, Lexi Zdenek too, and Rick Sorley. Sador also, Daryl Sador's on the team too. Yeah, I mean, that boy, oh boy, I'll tell you. They had some talent. They did have some talent. The Maple Leafs were a better team. It didn't matter. They had the great one. He was better than Dougie Gilmore. And Dougie Gilmore was a killer back then. But they had Gretzky. That's going to do it for this podcast. It certainly was a lot of fun. Going back down memory lane is always fun. Especially when you talk about a trade of that magnitude. It is just always, it's something. It really is something. Maybe he didn't deliver that cup, but what he did for the sport of hockey, what he did for Los Angeles, what he did for the city, what he did for California, the state of California, there's so many more players that play now, are registered, both men and women, boys and girls. There wouldn't have been no Mighty Ducks movie. There wouldn't have been Anaheim Mighty Ducks. There wouldn't have been Paul Kariya and Timo Salonen. They wanted to get Getzlaf and Perry together for that one cup. Or J.S. Giguere. Well, Sebastian Giguere. they're winning the business San Jose Sharks, who have some really awesome uniforms and just a dope logo, who could be a Stanley Cup contender again. They wouldn't be a team in Vegas. There wouldn't be a team in Arizona.
There would be so many differences. What do you think? There would have been a team in Florida, let alone two? Probably not. A lot of things changed.
Yeah. That's going to do it. All right. We will be reconvening tomorrow. And thank you for tuning in. As usual, you could follow me on the Twitter. I have two different accounts. My main account is at New York Puck. NEWYORKPUCK. And you could also follow me if you want at Derek, DEREK, Flex, FLEX, Felix, FELIX on the Twitter. Tune in for any of our other podcasts. Yesterday was all baseball. Tonight's was Yankees and baseball for a good portion, mixed in with a little NFL preseason, the Giants returning, and then the trade of the century with Wayne Gretzky, 30-year anniversary. So, very good show. Find the shows at blocktalkradio.com/hardhits21. All right. This is Derek Felix signing off, and we'll see you all next time. Enjoy the rest of your evening, folks. Have a good one.